keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey folks, welcome to Seculo. We have a lot to talk about today from the American Center for Law and Justice to get you up to speed on, and we want to make sure you know about all the work that we are doing right now at the American Center for Law and Justice when it comes to protecting life during this season where we celebrate Christmas, and it's such an important time of year for religious liberty, to make sure we're defending, of course, life, to make sure we're defending your free speech. And we are doing that, and we're going to put that on a display for you in the broadcast today so that you are updated on what the ACLJ is doing right now. I mean, again, you look at these cases, like the big win out of Nevada involving that student with the profane monologue. These are, again, these are students who are not even the age of adults, who technically in these many of these cases, you know, couldn't even buy a ticket to an R-rated movie, but could be forced to read profane monologues or somehow be punished by their school system, and their parents somehow being told that you have no say in this matter. And you could get victories in those cases like we did out of Nevada. You could, again, on the religious liberty front, on the pro-life front, or we have decided in Massachusetts to take the fight directly to the people, to support the pro-life pregnancy centers, these pregnancy resource centers, who are under attack in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. They are facing a full-on $8 million ad campaign with millions by the state. So this Commonwealth is using taxpayer dollars of citizens in Massachusetts and working with a pro-abortion organization to spend millions of dollars trying to defame these, again, pro-life pregnancy resource centers. We are not only fighting for them in court, we want to fight back with the advertising campaign. You will learn about that. You'll also learn about the cost of that. Because again, you can't just say you're going to run these campaigns and run these ads, put them on TV, put them on billboards, put them online, target everyone that's important and in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to make sure they are the truth is getting out. You can't do that for free. It takes financial resources. And because it's something new for the ACLJ to do, we want to make sure that we have raised funds just for that. So we'll be talking about that today on the broadcast as well. It is a critical time of the year to support the work of the ACLJ. I mean, we're working harder than ever. Again, you know, on the religious liberty front, cases coming in all the time because of Christmas and the fact that you've got all these, whether it's private employers, state or local governments, even federal governments trying to say, don't say that word or don't say Merry Christmas. It still is happening. And we have the cases out there. You can see it at ACLJ.org to prove. And they come in very quickly right around this time of year. So our team has to stay on it, and they do stay on it regardless. The ACLJ always ready to go. So this is not just a fundraising drive for January 1st and beyond in 2025. This is a fundraising drive for the cases that are coming in right now as we speak to the American Center for Law and Justice. It's the most important time of year for us to donate to the ACLJ. Let me tell you why. Just this year, when it comes to religious liberty cases, we have handled 142 religious liberty matters. That's clients, cases, briefs, demand letters, all fighting back. That's just on religious liberty. When it comes to pro-life legal matters, 175 pro-life legal matters, 197 free speech matters, 142, as we said, religious liberty matters, 126 legal actions battling the deep states, hundreds of others. We talked about Fani Willis yesterday on the broadcast. Here is when we need you to stand with us at the ACLJ. You're going to hear about all of our work today, the different kinds of work that we're doing, but you've got to donate. We can't do any of this work without your financial contribution to the ACLJ, and certainly we want to be able to plan as best we can to know what resources we are going to have as we begin 2025. These are the most crucial days. We're now within the 10 most crucial days of our fundraising for the entire year. So donate today at ACLJ.org. Be part of our Faith and Freedom year-end drive. Double the impact of your donation by donating today at ACLJ.org. You don't want to miss the broadcast today. Learn all about how your resources are being used at the ACLJ to fight back for freedom.
Welcome back to Seculo. Jeff Balaban's joining us from ACLJ Jerusalem. We had some pretty interesting updates going on over there. And of course, we had some interesting updates, Will, going on over here in regards to the current conflict between Gaza and Israel and what that looks like. And of course, that war that's been ongoing. But of course, it can't have to, it doesn't, something has to be positive. Something negative had to come out of this, something a bit controversial, and we're responding.
That's right. So as we told you last week, we uncovered among a ceremony, graduation ceremony of the National Academy, which is an FBI training academy for local law enforcement and some international police groups, that the day after Chris Wray announced that he would be resigning from his position at the end of the term, he was handing out diplomas, and he gave one to a man who was from an intelligence police force in the Palestinian Authority's control, and announced him as from Ramallah, State of Palestine. ACLJ did not take that and just say, okay, it's bad policy at the end of a presidency. We got a FOIA out, sending it out today.
Can we play the clip of this?
Yeah, this is Byte 4.
I think you need to see how egregious it is when you just see how casual. It's not like they said, made a statement. It's just very casual, like a graduation ceremony.
Right.
Take a look.
Hassam Abu Aisha, Preventative Security Organization, Ramallah, State of Palestine.
Yeah, you hear that, though, of course, just again, casually, nice little claps. And probably a lot of people not even thinking about it. But of course, you hear that and you go, oh, this is recognition of what they consider a state of Palestine.
Well, and so we've got a FOIA request out. We're going to get to the bottom of this. It's going to the FBI. I mean, I'm sure that they will sit on it on this administration. But Jeff, hopefully, in the coming administration, with Kash Patel at the helm and new leadership, we'll be able to actually find out what is going on within the Federal Bureau of Investigation when they so cavalierly announce someone as being from a place that the U.S. does not officially recognize as the state of Palestine, but they are clearly dishing out statehood at the FBI here in the last few weeks of the Biden administration. What are your thoughts on it when you saw it?
Well, thank God that we are taking this to a FOIA and trying to dig up what lies underneath this. Because, from the beginning of this administration, Team Biden has done everything it could to claim it's friendly to Israel, but undermine Israel's sovereignty, push the idea of a Palestinian state. There has never been, and God willing, there never will be, a state of Palestine. This is it's a terrible idea. It's an idea that Israel's pressured into to even go through negotiations, and the Palestinian Authority, which is legally just a successor to the PLO, a terrorist organization, has never dropped its actual behavior as a terrorist organization. And to recognize them as a state is not only illegal, it's not only against American law, it is a way to incite violence and hostility around the world against the country that is Israel. And so, yeah, it's a disaster. And I'm very glad that the ACLJ jumped on this. And yes, people didn't hear about it so much in Israel yet, but because there's so much else going on here. But it's necessary to find this out. It's necessary to uproot this.
Well, and Jeff, what's so shocking to me about it, and as someone who follows this closely, when I saw the clip, I actually started digging to make sure it was, one, not AI, because it's an announcer's voice. And so did someone create some misinformation to try to stir something up? Or did this happen years ago and no one just saw it? No, it was when I saw it had happened the afternoon prior. And to me, it raises so many questions, because we know what the Obama administration did when they stabbed Israel in the back on their way out the door when President-elect Trump was coming in 2017, where they abstained from a vote in the UN General Assembly that was trying to recognize the Palestinians as an observer state. Now you look at this, and we have been talking about what kind of bad moves are going to come out against Israel. We've seen quite a few, but to me, it was more shocking that was said from the MC, which was reading from a script. So who wrote it? And two, that there wasn't even like a grimace on Chris Wray's face when that was announced that way. Everyone just seemed okay with the way the language was being used. And I think that speaks to a larger problem that we need to be looking at and rooting out within holdovers, within bureaucrats that are embedded there, because the ideology is no longer, we really want a two-state solution and this pipe dream that we can achieve that with peace and equal territory and whatnot, but that it appears people within the U.S. government already believe there is a Palestinian state and are okay with calling it that in official ceremonies.
You're making a very important point, William, which is exactly right. Part of this is it could be malice. People who are trying to undermine the federal government by an American law by creating a state de facto but it could be that people just believe there is such a thing. You know, if you go on social media, so many people talk about Israel-Palestine as though there's such a thing as a state of Palestine. People on Capitol Hill talk about Palestine as though it's a country or it's a state. It's not. There's the Palestinian Authority. Again, the Palestinian Authority is a successor legal entity to the PLO, a terrorist organization that has been given control over vast swaths of Judea and Samaria. And yes, there has to be some balance of security cooperation between the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority. But by the same token, in Israel, what the news really is here that you don't hear about there so much is the rash and the huge increase in Palestinian versus Palestinian, meaning in Judea and Samaria, the Arabs killing each other now, right now, including members of these same security forces, which America has been training, which America has been arming, and now apparently which America is educating and giving awards to or diplomas to at the FBI.
And Jeff, I want to bring up something you and I talked about actually before the show today, is that, you know, the world looks on and they see the weakening of Iran. We see Hamas being decimated. Yes, there's still fighting between Israel and Hamas right now, but Israel is not subject to the types of rocket attacks from Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas that they have been over the past years. And then you see the leadership of Hezbollah taken out. You see that Israel was able to go in and get rid of a lot of strategic Assad regime sites so that whatever the future of that failed state may be, that there is a security buffer there for the Israelis. But one group that hasn't been talked about as much are the Houthis in Yemen, which is still an Iranian proxy, which has been firing directly at Jerusalem, where you are, over the past several days. Could you give our audience and listeners a little bit of an update on what's going on? Because it's sometimes easy to forget that with all these proxies falling, that there is still very real danger for the citizens of Israel, even to this day.
Well, that's true. And, you know, people are thinking right now that they've really degraded the ability of Israel's enemies to launch weapons into Israeli civilian areas. Because let's face it, the world yells about Israel, but they take for granted that it's okay that on all these different fronts, all these different entities and groups have been firing missiles, rockets into Israel's population centers. And there's always been a thesis that, well, they avoid Jerusalem, A, because of the very large Arab Muslim population, B, because some of Islam's self-proclaimed holiest sites are here, like on the Temple Mount, where they have they have two major holy sites on the Temple Mount, the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. And so people assume they wouldn't, but that's not true. Of course they'll fire at this, because it seems that the one religious principle for many of these groups above all else is the genocide of the Jews. And so on Thursday, I believe it was, shortly after it got off the air with you, we had alarms here in Jerusalem in my building. We were told to go to the bomb shelter, and then there was the all clear about 15 minutes, 10 minutes later. And when we first walked out, we were told, well, it was a false alarm, and then we found out later it wasn't a false alarm. And again, earlier today, the same thing happened. Missiles were launched from Houthi territory, from Yemen, and the alarms are actually given because Israel tries to and successfully has shot them down in air. But what that also means is that fragments can land. So number one, where they're coming from Yemen, it's a very long distance. They're trying to estimate, they're trying to be very careful when they put sirens here, which neighborhood, like within square blocks, rockets are going to land. When it comes to this, they have to do large areas. So today, the sirens were all across the center of Israel, like everywhere. But some of the fragments actually landed here in North Jerusalem. Thank God nobody was hurt. And last time, again, they blew it out of the sky. But yes, it's still a war zone, even in the major civilian population centers in Israel.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. I want to give you a minute also. If we're sticking around, we got 1 minute left here. And just a moment, as we are telling people, it's the last 2 weeks of the year for fundraising. And it's the end of our Faith and Freedom Year End Drive. The ACLJ Jerusalem is there at a very important time. And these are the reasons, because we're making sure we are on top of things that are even American-centered there in Jerusalem, like what we saw earlier.
Yeah, look, it's obviously, I do this with ACLJ, via ACLJ, as ACLJ Jerusalem, because I believe that ACLJ plays a really unique role of all of the organizations that I'm aware of that have been in and out of Washington and in and out of the media for a very long time. In terms of, and you just look at the kind of people who join with us when they cycled out of the last Trump administration, the fact that we had the former Secretary of State, the fact that we had Rick Grenell, who, by the way, is now the man with the coolest title ever, in all of Washington. Right. Tulsi Gabbard, others. The fact that they officially come with us and work with us, it's because this is not just, it's supposed to be a law firm, but it's so much more than that.
The Absolutely. That Jeff, thank you so much. We're going to head to Heartbreak, ACLJ.org. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Seculo. Christy Campagnone, Senior Managing Counsel with the ACLJ, is joining us. And if you were just watching, which I encourage you all should watch, we do a full television style broadcast. You can find it on YouTube, on Rumble, on ACLJ.org, and on the Salem News channel. We're there as well. And there may be some news coming up for that coming up in the new year as well. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But in those breaks, if you're watching on one of the streaming platforms, you got to see a video leading up to how we got involved in this case, Christy. And I think you need to kind of back everybody up a little bit, because it is nice when the ACLJ can put things, to bed, can finish and say, we have completed this assignment. And it has happened. It has happened in a great way. But let's back it up. Give us a brief background on this case and how we got involved.
Absolutely. So as you saw in this clip, we had a 15-year-old minor required to read a monologue in her acting class that it contained explicit sexual material. And, once her parent found out that this happened, she was absolutely appalled and actually went first to the school board meeting, and her microphone was turned off because of the curse words that were used in that explicit material while she was trying to raise the alarm as to what happened to her daughter. So naturally, they went ahead to pursue a lawsuit. And we came in after her local counsel initially started the complaint, and we helped amend the complaint to survive the motion to dismiss. And I think the big, wonderful victory came after we had a hard fight during discovery, which is where we took depositions of all of the administrators of that school. And of course, we're pleased to announce that we were able to get a victory for our client. She received a monetary settlement fund, and she also is going to have teaching and training for the teachers at this school to make sure that this never happens again. And it was all as a result of the depositions, where we were able to get admissions from the administrators that this material was absolutely inappropriate and should have never been in the classroom.
And Christy, I think that that's an important part of this as well, is that this is a victory, but our attorneys that have been working for a long time. I mean, the school board meeting where the mother spoke was 2.5 years ago, and we've been telling our audience about it for a very long time as well. But this victory wasn't all of a sudden. The school board got a demand letter like sometimes we send, and they're like, the school administration said, let's fix this. This isn't right. And then it went to the lawsuit phase, and it wasn't like, maybe now they're serious. We'll walk away. But it took our attorneys going out there, and you joined us from Nevada on a broadcast where you had just completed a deposition. You've been doing depositions the day before with our team of attorneys out there. And it took that level of getting to discovery, which many people in many lawsuits try to avoid that phase, even beyond the trial phase, because of how invasive and intense a deposition can be in that discovery process. But that, when we got there and got those depositions, is what finally made this district realize, you know what? We don't need to go to trial. We're on a losing course here. We need to find a way out of this and settle with this client.
Absolutely. So we had the school realizing, okay, we've had at least three of our administrators admit to several of the elements that we would have to prove in court, that the material had no pedagogical interest, meaning there was no reason that it should have been found in a classroom. They also found that one of the administrators admitted that even if there had been parental consent, it still should have not had a place in the classroom. So, I mean, we're talking beyond just the books where we require parents to sign permission slips to read. This material did not have an educational interest and should have never been in their schools. So once we have those admissions coming from their administrators, they realized, okay, we're going to not want to fight this in court anymore.
Time in the country where this is what is happening, where you have such a sensitive culture, and it really is a very sensitive culture, but when you actually call these things out, and making kids do this type of material. This is in high school, by the way. I teach a screen acting course in university level, and I have way stricter rules than this. I have wild rules because of the way we are right now. And by the way, I'm all for that. I want everyone to feel comfortable. I'm not going in there and make anyone uncomfortable. This is on a high school level. This is happening. Like, that is wild. And we were able to get in there and stop this. And what I do like about this, and I think our audience needs to know this, Christy, is though you hear settlement, and I think your mind goes to, for some people, they may go, oh, okay, they just, it's not really a victory, it's a settlement. And a lot of times people think of settlement as something that happens very quickly. It happens when no one wants to go to court. But this was not that process. Went to court, took years of time, took all the effort, the travel, the money that's being spent, the money that has to be raised to then be able to be spent for the ACLJ. Because again, of course, this mother and her family did not pay a dollar for our representation and for our work.
I think it's really important for the clients, the fact that it's in their best interest to wrap this up and get justice for their child, but to not have this draw out for years and years and years. And like you've mentioned, we've already been in this for 2 years. And so I think it's a victory for them in that the school paid up. I mean, the school had to pay. There is going to be, you know, training for those teachers. This is getting national attention, and now the spotlight is on this school to make sure that this never happens again. And then I think most importantly, and this is key, is that even when you have a settlement, you still have created precedent so that if this happens to any other student, they can now pull this case and say, look, these are the facts. This is what happened in this case, and the school had to pay. So my child needs to be protected because this was inappropriate, and we have it on the record as precedent in the courts now that the school had to pay for this kind of action.
Yeah, Christy, thank you so much for joining us and going through this because it is a very important time. This is Giving Tuesday. So what that means is that is the biggest charitable giving day of the year for a lot of people. This is the big promotional day. Obviously, a lot of you wait till the end of the year, post-Christmas bonus, that kind of thing happens. But we encourage you right now, it is one of our biggest days of the year. And it historically has been since Giving Tuesday kind of was founded. So I encourage you right now, if you hear the work that Christy is doing and her team, amazing work for people, because now this is settled doesn't mean those kind of fights don't come in each and every day. Every day we're going through the intake, legal intake. If you go to aclj.org/help, you fill out a form, a very simple form. If it's within the scope of what we do here, you get assigned to an attorney for absolutely free for you. But someone does have to pay those attorneys. Someone does have to pay for that travel. And thankfully, there are thousands of people like you who are watching this or listening to this today who either decided to become an ACLJ champion, that's someone that gives on a monthly level, or someone that can make a big 1 year or, you know, one time a year single donation. We are built on the backbone of people giving $50, $70, $40. So don't think if you give that your impact is not doing anything. All donations are doubled right now. Whatever you can give, there is an ACLJ champion. There's a fund there that's ready to be unlocked right now. Because as I said, it is not just the occasion where one is complete. Like I said, it is hard for us sometimes to fundraise on victories, but understand that a victory means that also frees up these lawyers to spend more time on the next one. And that next one is probably coming today, because that's just how it works, especially around Christmas time. And we know this. I know it feels like it's old news, the sort of quote unquote war on Christmas, but you are shocked at how many things we get, how many legal queries we get every year from people who want to put up a nativity scene, who want to sing Oh Holy Night at their event and are getting told no. And we're going to be there for them as well and take care of that. And maybe that's you. And if it is, go to our website right now. We've got a second half hour coming up. We're going to be joined by Jeff Balaban, ACLJ Jerusalem. And again, I can't encourage you more. Right now, do it. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
So we've been talking, of course, the issues at the FBI with Christopher Wray. And, of course, he has submitted his resignation that he'll leave before President Trump is in office because he was going to be fired. His replacement has already been named, Kash Patel. And I think, you know, there's not a better time to get someone like Kash Patel into the FBI or Pam Bondi at the Department of Justice because of this information we find out about January 6th. And, you know, you're told that you are a conspiracy theorist, even a dangerous conspiracy theorist, if you talk about it and even ask the question about how involved was the FBI on January 6th and were they just there really to watch the crowd and issue back reports about security status and why did we know that there were three, but now we find out there are an additional 23. By the way, none of them got charged, so it wasn't like the FBI was said they were like doing it on their own accord and not acting as confidential informants. And why did Christopher Wray get away for so many years with saying that there were no agents involved, you know, in going into the Capitol? Is that agents are different than informants, and he would never really get to, you know, the bottom of the truth about, you know, trying to deflect. It's typical Washington that a week ago you could have gotten banned on social media for saying now what's in the headlines in mainstream media, and of course calls for more investigation, and we'll get that done if Kash Patel's there and Pam Bondi are there. So it ties up directly to those confirmation battles as well. I want to take a call on it. We're going to talk about some of these new efforts that we want to launch, brand new from the ACLJ. Logan's joining us in the studio live, but let me go to Linda first in New York online too. Hey, Linda.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
On the topic of Christopher Wray, an abominable embarrassment to the United States of America since the day President Trump allowed him to stay in his position. He's been laughing at us ever since, and you can see it on his smirk every time he's being questioned on Capitol Hill. It's disgusting. And my prayer is that you guys get into the inside workings of all these. It's abominable what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, listen. What we're going to do is everything we can to help get the information out that people deserve, because you don't deserve to be called a nut, a conspiracy theorist, and then a report comes out from Inspector General confirming everything that you were being told you were a nut and dangerous for even thinking might have been the option. It's actually worse than what a lot of people thought. There were a lot more involvement with these informants, and you have to ask, what part, where were they? Like, did they help break the door down? Did they tell people, break the door down? Did they tell people, smack that cop, let's push through and encourage that kind of violence? That's the kind of info we need after an event where, you know, you've got people serving long jail sentences and you're called really a danger or threat to the country if you even ask questions about our institutions' involvement when you know that they were involved to a certain extent. And now we know it was an extent, it was up to 26 FBI-connected individuals. Are there more? I don't think that's going to come for Christopher Wray, and there's certainly more work we've got to do at the ACLJ with FOIA, and we'll get to you on that. I wanted to take that call. It's just important. We got to get the right nominees confirmed for these positions. That is a major battle that's coming up in Washington, D.C. Those meetings are already occurring in the U.S. Senate, but we have to be ready for those fights. Support our work, too, and our government affairs work at ACLJ.org. Now, Logan, I told people we want to do something new in the realm of fighting for life. Now that this fight has been, you know, taken out of Washington, D.C., and Roe versus Wade has been overturned, the fight has gone local, and it's gone to the states. And in some of these blue states, the fight is directly with pro-life, not activists, but pro-life even pregnancy centers that offer other solutions than abortion.
Right, exactly. Head on. And we get back from the next segment, I'm going to, so happy to premiere our new campaign, specifically based on that story you heard me tell over the summer when I was visiting Boston and we saw those, you know, horrific ads against pregnancy resource centers. My team has been putting together an incredible campaign over the last 5 or 6 months. And now we are ready to roll it out. First in Massachusetts and then by God's grace and with your support around the world. I can't wait for you to see it. It is filled with hope. It's filled with joy. And it's coming up in the next segment. So stay tuned. Of course, you can support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. And I'm going to be tracking it today because today is the big fundraising day for this life-saving campaign.
To Seculo. We are taking your calls too, 1-800-684-3110. But we've got a new fight that we can engage in, the fight for life. You know these attacks, we've talked about it here. You know the lawsuits are continuing, and it's actually Massachusetts has to respond to our deadline today in court, where we represent a PRC, a pro-life pregnancy resource center, fighting back because of the way they have been described in these official ads that have been sponsored by pro-abortion organizations and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts using people's taxpayer dollars. And I mean, really defaming these pro-life pregnancy right. centers. And so, Logan, the idea here is that it's not just always about legislation. It can also be about the messaging, and they want to destroy these pregnancy resource centers and make them out to be places of evil or wrongdoing and act as if they're criminal.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Is back in July, I was in Boston walking around having a great day. I walked out of my hotel and this billboard struck me. It said, avoid anti-abortion centers. I thought, that's strange. I mean, it's not that, you know, you always hear pro-choice ads here and there. And then we saw that it was something run by the state, by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we said, we got to do something about this, whether that's legally, but also in my heart, I knew we needed to take our own message to the streets. So we reached out to some of our friends in Massachusetts, found out that they were also appalled by what was happening there, that this did not represent even the values. They may be a very pro-choice state, but this did not represent the values of the people in Boston and in Massachusetts. So we've spent the last 6 months or so working on a brand new campaign, an outdoor ad campaign, a digital video ad campaign that is called Choice Begins Here. It is beautifully done. Our team has done an amazing job. It provides hope. You see their ads? Sadness. You know, sad faces, all this. You see our versions of this? It is completely opposite. It is to make sure people have the opportunity to visit pro-life pregnancy resource centers, to have a real choice in the matter. So we're going to see billboards. You're going to see advertisements. You're going to see digital billboards here and there throughout Massachusetts. And then you're going to have these video ads that I'm going to show you the preview of the very first one in just a minute. You're going to have these that are going to be running throughout social media. They're going to be running on television. You're going to be able to find them wherever. But actually, they only happen if you support this. And you may say, Logan, what about Massachusetts? Why do I care about Massachusetts? Well, that's just the start. That's the epicenter, if you will, because that is where the need is right now. But our goal, if you support this, is to take this across the country to all pro-choice, you'd say, states. States where abortion is still not only legal, but is running wild. And they're attacking places that are providing food for mothers, that are providing clothing for babies, that are providing obviously prenatal and postnatal services. There's always this lie that you hear from the left saying, oh, pro-lifers only care about babies when they're in the womb and then they're born and no one cares. And that is the exact opposite of what's going on at these pro-life pregnancy resource centers. We've worked with so many of them throughout the years. So we have developed a resource that people can go on to find a pregnancy resource center in their area to contact people who are going to give them true options. Because you know, when you go into a Planned Parenthood, they're really only going to be pushing one choice. And that choice, of course, is abortion. Now with this, we decided let's take this a very different way. Let's provide hope, provide light in the darkness, instead of these horrible options that you see from the left. And I'm really excited to premiere this. And after you watch this first sample ad, I'm going to tell you how you can support it. Because we have a lofty goal. Because to get outdoor ad campaign, to get videos put up, you've seen them in bathrooms, you'll see them all over the place. This is not cheap. And by the way, this isn't really a traditional ACLJ fundraiser in the sense. So we are paying for this, but it's not like an ad for ACLJ. Go, support, go donate. That's not the goal. The goal is to spread the good news of these mostly Christian pro-life pregnancy resource centers. They're doing amazing work in communities where it's needed the most. So take a look, the first look of the first ad for Choice Begins Here.
I'll never forget that day. Scariest moment of my life. I had just started my business, and then this. Pregnant? Really? I just thought about all of my dreams falling apart. I needed help, I needed answers. Places I heard of, they seemed to only offer one option. Then I found a pregnancy resource center, and they talked to me about my options. She listened, she actually cared about me. No shame, no judgment. I'll never forget that day either. The day that I realized maybe this wasn't the end of my dreams, but just the start of one I hadn't even imagined.
To find a pregnancy resource center near you, go to choicebeginshere.org.
And that is your first look, again, at our hopeful ad campaign to hopefully get more people to go to pro-life pregnancy resource centers to actually see that there are real choices, real hope. And, of course, they provide incredible amount of coverage, whether that, again, prenatal, postnatal, food, baby food, formula, clothes. They offer so much, and we've seen the amazing work they do. But the state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is trying to shut them down. They're trying to say avoid them, ignore them. Pretend they don't, do not go to them. Here's a list. Their website is, here's a list of places to avoid. And of course, they also say, look for words like hope in the title. It says that on their website. So you know what they're pushing. But what Choice Begins Here, again, a project of the ACLJ, we're going to change the way pro-life activism is done. And we can do that as we head into this Christmas season with you. And I'm going to ask you for this because I know what the budget is because I just got off the phone and I have a call later today about the budgets that we have to spend to really blanket these cities. And it is lofty. Go back to me. I want to talk to people directly. It is lofty. Okay? So I'm going to tell you right now, to do this in just one market, it's $500,000. So again, you've showed up for me before. When I've said that that is a number we needed. And I'm going to ask you right now to do it again. And what if we could do it today? What if we could do it in the next 24 hours? So I'm going to encourage you to go to aclj.org, or if you want to know more about the campaign, aclj.org/savebabies. You've heard about the Massachusetts deception they've been running, the mass deception as we've been calling it. But now it's time to turn the table and give hope to people who need it. And it is Christmas. And it is an important time for us to give back. And this is an incredible opportunity. And again, if it works, if this works, we're going to take it well beyond Massachusetts. We'll be coming to your home state if it's necessary. Obviously, we're going to pick out where it needs to go. And this is going to all start, by the way, in the first quarter of next year. So it took months to get all the pieces together. The billboard art, you know, the television ads, and there's still more to be created. And I can't wait to share even the more real stories that have come out of this that are going to blow your mind that only God could orchestrate. But right now, I'm going to encourage you to make that donation. I'm going to play the ad one more time. And during that, I'm going to ask you to make your donation. Go to aclj.org, or let's throw the QR code up, or scan that QR code right now. And then let's take a look one more time at our Choice Begins Here premiere ad.
I'll never forget that day. Scariest moment of my life. I had just started my business, and then this. Pregnant? Really? I just thought about all of my dreams falling apart. I needed help. I needed answers. Places I heard of, they seemed to only offer one option. Then I found a pregnancy resource center, and they talked to me about my options. She listened. She actually cared about me. No shame, no judgment. I'll never forget that day either. The day that I realized maybe this wasn't the end of my dreams, but just the start of one I hadn't even imagined.
To find a pregnancy resource center near you, go to choicebeginshere.org.
All right, folks, so you heard directly from Logan about what it takes for us to make this happen. So we can, again, for us to produce here, to put all the parts together, that's step one. It's done. I mean, it's ready to go. It can go as big as we're able to have the resources to put it. And as Logan said, if this is a success in Massachusetts, we're going to go to these other states that are targeting these pro-life pregnancy resource centers. that they're trying to run them out of business, make them out to be these places of somehow illegal conduct, that they're doing something wrong and damaging and scary, and you have to stay away because they offer options other than abortion. And they, again, they're doing this in part and part. Remember, the state here, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and pro-abortion organizations are working together. Yeah. So they're sharing taxpayer money. Millions of dollars to run their campaign. But we believe with a counter campaign, as you heard Logan say, to really do it in Massachusetts, it could turn on ready to go, you know, January 1, but it's going to cost $500,000 to do that, to really blanket the media and the people with different kinds of advertising. So are you going to be there when we need you the most? Again, to fight back for these pregnancy resource centers, you can go to ACLJ.org right now and donate. If you go to ACLJ.org/savebabies, has more about the campaign as well. You can donate to either of those places. Your gift will be doubled. $500,000. The quicker we can raise that, the quicker we can be in the next state and the next state. Go to ACLJ.org. Double your impact today to help save lives. Secular people got calls in on the FBI as well. I want to go to that, but we do want to underscore this new campaign that we want to launch, the ACLJ. It's ready to go. We've already previewed it for you here today, so we'll talk about that again in a moment, kind of what the facets are of that. We know it can be a big number to hear, and it's been a different kind of economy, but you're seeing, you know, the difference in already what a Trump potential, you know, presidency beginning in January has already done to the place like the stock market. Of course, that's not always immediate impacts, but the idea. So we are hoping again that you can help us launch what it would be new for the ACLJ in the sense of using these kind of resources to fight back. But it's also because in the past, the pro-abortion organizations and some of these pro-abortion state leaders certainly didn't like pregnancy centers, but they weren't really demonizing them. And now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, it's like they've now turned their attention to the places that provide women other options than just killing their unborn child. So we'll talk about that in a minute again and kind of what that full scope means. But I do want to go to the phones with Lewis in Colorado on line one. Hey, Lewis.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if Kash Patel would consider hiring the two whistleblowers and if they would consider coming back to the FBI and be put in leadership position.
You know, I don't know if Marcus Allen would ever want to go back to the FBI after what they put him through. I mean, he's still in the moment, as we talked to Tristan Levitt earlier this week from Empower Oversight, where they're still fighting over his back pay. I mean, most of it he's gotten now, but they're still fighting. I mean, so even after winning in court, getting your security clearance restored so that you can move on in the private sector and really move on with your life, but then getting the resources, the financial resources that were held back, still fighting for to this day. Now, I don't want to speak for them, but you know, with Garrett O'Boyle, we're still fighting in court. He hasn't gotten to that point yet that Marcus Allen did, where the FBI has settled and, you know, determined the back pay and his security clearance. So, could there be some interesting things there available, especially to provide advice? I think what you look for there, Lewis, is they may not want to go back inside the agency because, again, you might know that Kash Patel is going to be there for a handful of years, but then it's going to turn to the next, you know, who's next as president? Who do they put in? Is it somebody like Kash Patel, or is it somebody who turns into Christopher Wray and does exactly what the FBI didn't need, which is turn it more into a swampy and secretive and just bureaucratically run agency that he was happy to oversee and now run out of D.C., before the Republicans come in and before President Trump comes back to fire him. So I do think they could be useful in the sense of advisors. You know, how did this happen to you so that we can prevent this from happening to people in the future? So the idea itself, I think, is a good idea. And I think people like Kash Patel would be open to listening and hearing from those individuals who have gone through that process. Because when they're trying to clean up the FBI, they're going to be looking for whistleblowers to come to them. And if those people aren't protected by law and you can treat them differently as the FBI, which is how the law stands right now, then it's kind of tough to really encourage people to come forward when you, even as the director, can't protect them from potential real legal jeopardy, like their entire salaries and their lives and their jobs. So a great point there. It's something that we're going to watch very carefully. We're defending Garrett O'Boyle and others.
It'd be interesting to bring those people in also in like an advisory role, you know, somewhere just you know, briefly, you know, a contract or something like that. What doesn't have to be an employee.
How did this, what happened to you and how did it happen to you so that you had to, you know, take on lawsuits because you had a different idea or you wanted to raise your voice as a whistleblower?
Yeah, I think about like Frank Abagnale, who, you know, was the master check forger who they made the movie about. And then eventually he went up going to work for the government to help stop forgery.
Yeah,
because he was a mastermind at it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is on the whistleblower front, there's not a lot of protection for FBI for certain kinds of whistleblowers. And the government utilizes that protection, you know, to say this is security information. So they get put on this unpaid leave. So they hold over your head, well, if you quit, we're going to take away your security clearance. The money's gone. So you've got to stick with us through your entire review. And if we deem you, if you take us to court maybe and it's imposed or through settlement, that they move on. But yeah, certainly they have a lot to add in a different way now that there will be different leadership at the FBI. So it won't just be testifying to a Congress who feels for them. It will be also testifying, talking to and working with the FBI director who needs more of them to actually clean up the FBI. And Logan, to these points, all of these are big, big initiatives. I want to go back to the campaign in Massachusetts because just to let people know, you know, putting the ads together, figuring out where to place them, and tell them how we got to that $500,000 number.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we've been working intensely with people in Massachusetts, different ad placement companies, the ones that will be happily work with us, by the way. And there were some of these companies, and some are our partners, like at Salem, who were very emotional when we pitched this because they've seen these billboards. They've seen these ads, and they're defeated. These pro-life pregnancy resource centers do not have the funds to go and run a counter campaign like this. They don't have the resources to do it. Most of their staffs are volunteers. You know, many are really involved in the personal side of this. These aren't huge organizations. So when they heard about it, they were thrilled. And we were able to work with them as well as groups who specifically work with marketing to people who are in need of resources, pregnancy resources. And how do we talk to them? We don't talk to them with shame. We don't talk to them, you know, with some sort of fire and brimstone. You talk to them to provide hope that they can go in, be heard, listen, be a part of that conversation, be presented with their options, and then hopefully, you know, maybe get an ultrasound. Hopefully then make that choice for life. And you'll see some of the billboards. We can put some of those up that we're working on right now. You know, planned or not, we can help. Whatever you decide, we're here for you. You know, the Pregnancy Resource Centers. So it's a different kind of message. You've created a life. Help someone else create a family. So obviously that's one that's more aimed towards adoption. And they can do that. No shame, no pressure. Free services for people who care. And of course, this is you know, showing a younger woman and what that would look like. Sacrifice today and shine tomorrow. There's so many great ones that also that are marketed towards professional women who are, because you're hearing that a lot. You know, I saw just a disgusting campaign that ran that was specifically, hey, your life's destroyed because you got pregnant. Here's how you can fix it. And it broke my heart. So now we're able to do this incredible counter campaign. It is different. It is interesting. It is not typically what you see from the ACLJ, but that is why it's precisely needed right now. So again, I'm watching the fundraising come in. I'm seeing some of your response and it's amazing so far. Be a part of it. If we can raise that $500,000 today, who knows where we can take this next? And I know that sounds like a lofty number, but there's thousands of people that are watching right now. There's millions that will be listening later on. So I encourage you to go to aclj.org, or if you want to know more about the campaign, aclj.org/savebabies. You can also scan the QR code right now. Do it. We know if you're going to do it right now that you are there to say you support this initiative. So we encourage you to do it right now. You know, the pro-life movement is changing rapidly. We are having to adjust and change as now is moved to the state level. And some of these states have gone so radical that we have to respond correctly.
Yeah. And so, folks, what you do, you go to aclj.org today, aclj.org or aclj.org/savebabies. You can use that QR code if you're watching right now. And you donate today. And if we get to that number, we're able to launch the full campaign in Massachusetts. The information is prepared. As Logan said, it's all been put together. And this is to fight back for those pregnancy resource centers. If we can do it in Massachusetts, we can take it to other states where the pro-life viewpoint and these pregnancy resource centers who are serve on the front lines of the movement to save lives are under attack. They really are. And we want to make sure this goes off in Massachusetts and that we can do it in other states. But we've got to have the resources to do this. As Logan said, this is new. It's not something we planned for a year ago that we necessarily need to launch as the ACLJ. So donate today at aclj.org. Double the impact of that donation. Critical time, aclj.org.